I know the roots of Halloween, but you know what? Almost nobody nowadays does. I just don't let my kids dress up as anything evil or seductive or anything like that.
I want to be
something cute and go from door to door.
I'm going to be what he's doing.
Our Power Ranger, when we were 4 years old.
I can't even hear myself. I know she can't hear me. So, like the roots of it is, that's taking the roots and the idea is the masquerading part of it, where the souls of the departed dead going back to the house at the fall equinox, and the homeowner is kind of warding off evil spirits and thieves. And that's how the Druids get mixed with jack-o'-lantern and stuff like that, scare off evil spirits. But you honestly think that those kids out there are acting like ghosts and demons and goblins and stuff.
Or
worshipping Satan.
Some of them.
They'll do it on October 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and the rest of the year, too. And it is a high holy day for the Wiccan, right? Old-fashioned nowadays, and that's how my kids are going to be raised. Kearney, we got great schools as far as qualified teachers and stuff like that, but there's a lot of disparity when it comes to worldviews. Public schools in general. Your family, let's suppose you have a religious family. You send your kid, you surrender your kid to the state from preschool on up to 12th grade. Right? Mom and dad are trying to tell you that the Bible is God's word, and their lives are deeply rooted in faith. But yet the smart people, I say that in quotations because they're not all really that smart, the teachers that you're exposed to from kindergarten to 12th grade, never once will you see them crack open a Bible. Never once will you hear them quote it, and never once will you hear a prayer uttered from their lips. Over the course of 12 years, what's the transfer? Smart people don't have faith, don't believe. That's the transfer, that's a logical transfer. Now, my parents grew up, they went to public schools, but they went prior to 1962, so the teachers read the Bible, the teachers prayed, it was part of the school day, and they very, very different attitude. That's also the generation that beat back to totalitarianism, communism, the Great Depression, and all of that.
But then there's also, like, you can't, there's, like, exceptions to every rule. Like, then there's people like me who, like, my mom and my dad, like, barely ever go to church. They don't even go for Christmas. And, like, my grandparents, like, they're...
And that's their prerogative.
Yeah, and my grandparents...
Why should they impose that on the rest of the world?
No, I know that, but, like, but my grandparents and, like, my grandpa, especially, he's, like, he goes to church every single day. Like, every day in the morning, he gets up and goes to church, and he reads the Bible at night, and he prays and stuff. And, like, they took care of me, my grandparents, when I was younger, and, like, my mom, and they would give me up from school and stuff. And then I come to school, and I see, like, that most of the people in school are, like, my mom, you know, like, oh, religion, you know. And, like, that kind of, like, shifted me towards, like, my grandparents, like, you know, like, now I go to church every Sunday, like, and without anyone asking, without my mom making me go, without my parents, I go by myself, and, like, now I get a whole group of friends who, like, I bring them to church every Sunday. And so, like, it doesn't always, you know,
no, you're right. There are exceptions. I don't disagree with that. My only thing is that those are the exceptions. Like I said, it's the exception, not the norm. As a parent, I want to create an environment that makes it more likely that my kid is going to have faith, not less likely. You know what I mean? So that's why that was one of my concerns. And now I think it's sufficiently grounded in, you know, returning from home and things like that.
School so that you can separate personal beliefs from teachers and administrators from non-religious, you know, non-religious teachings during school, like school prayer and all that?
No. Purpose of public school was to provide free education for people that couldn't afford education, period. That's the purpose of public school. What it's become is social engineering. It's supposed to reflect the values and belief systems of the parents. That's why we have school boards elected from the population. Now, I got to believe that most of the people on the school board have faiths maybe similar to mine, but yet the state comes up with some weird perception of what education ought to be, and they jump on the bandwagon.
What would decide what should be... what religion should be taught in schools? What would decide that?
No, it's not about teaching. My point is it's not about teaching religion. And And this was, you know, these issues will all come up when we get to the 1920s and things begin to get legislated, and we'll talk about them in class. But the public school shouldn't teach a religion. But the scriptures aren't religion.
They're not?
The scriptures are at the foundation of the world's religions, the world's main religions. Anyway, religion is a set way of doing things. Like, for example, if we take Christian faiths, right, you have many varieties. You have Roman Catholicism, the Methodists, the Presbyterians, the Baptists. We differ on church government, things like that. But essentially, we need to read in one great book, the Bible. We should be able to bring that into the classroom, read it, and it shouldn't be threatening to anybody.
Well, what if some students don't believe in the Bible?
That's their prerogative. What if the student doesn't believe in religion? What if the student doesn't believe in some, you know, other aspect of the educational curriculum?
Well, evolution is scientific. Evolution.
Is it? You want to bring in a Bible?
Yes.
Read it in school,
I could get you a whole bunch of information on it.
I'm 38 years old. I've seen the information. But give me the scientific method.
That's what I mean.
You have to find out what the problem is first, I think.
I think it's find the problem. Observation, doesn't it?
No, you have to determine what the problem is.
Do you want me to go get my earth sign?
We don't even have to do it in order. Let's just list the steps. Some teachers list 7, some list 5, right? Whatever. You give me your list. Hypothesis? Okay, what's next?
Collect data?
Yeah.
That's how we do that.
What else?
Observe.
Observation?
Don't observe me with my high data.
We already said we're not going to be concerned with you. What else?
Really?
Hey, you guys look back. You're like the two little old men on the puppet show, the Muppet show. Life is going on, and you're in the balcony doing your own thing. Okay, come on, be part of this discussion. What else? How about experimentation?
Analyze
the
data, and then come up with
that.
I think you guys are coming up with these steps.
Well, you
dropped
the X.
I think it's an X.
Yeah. Okay. Collecting data, observations,
I think it's supposed to be the experiment.
Repetition.
Yeah. I'm just writing it down.
Okay. Yours is not necessarily important for history, okay? This is in the science class, but the statement was evolution is scientific. Now, you assume that because you've been indoctrinated for at least 11 years now, right? At least, if you went to kindergarten 12, if you went to pre-K 13, maybe just were comfortable up at a state babysitting agency, it might be longer. But this roughly is the scientific method, right? And when you get up to this whole creation evolution debate, the argument goes something like this. You're a believer. Your argument is based on faith. But I believe in evolution. My ideas are based on
facts.
Science or facts, right? Okay. Now, I can see creation is based on faith, but the idea of faith is much different than what we taught faith is in school. Now, I would also say that evolution is based on faith too. Because if you take this, what's the hypothesis? What's the assumption of evolution? You look at the world, or let's take biological life. You look at biological life.
That we all.
There's small life, and there's big life. Or there's simple life and intelligent life, and somehow we all evolved from simpler life forms and got to the complex life forms that we're in now. Right? That's the assumption. That may be your hypothesis. Anybody ever observe it? No. You can collect some data, right? Like the fossil record?
Yeah.
Anybody ever reproduce, anybody ever produce it?
Not really.
No. We say that life can spontaneously generate, but as often as scientists try it, they've never done it. Okay? So can the experiment be repeated?
No.
Can it be a scientific fact?
No.
No. Because this is how it works. Like, if I were to say water boils at, what is it, 212 degrees Fahrenheit? Is it 212 degrees?
Let's say it's like that.
100 degrees Celsius.
That would work. Okay, 100 degrees Celsius. Okay. That can be tested. I could say, or LeClaire could say, that's our hypothesis, and then I'll let you, raise your question. Don't let me forget, though. Okay?
Yep.
Let's say that's our assumption. Water will boil at 100 degrees Celsius. We can very easily test that. We take a pot of water, we put it on a Bunsen burner, on a stove, we put it on a burner, and we have to put it on a burner. And we can observe at each second, each minute, what's occurring with the water. We can record temperatures at 100 degrees. What do we see happening? The bubbles. That's not enough, though. That's not a scientific fact. I have to repeat it many times myself. Then I take those notes, and what do I do with them? Give them to the scientific community. If other scientists who are unbiased come to the same conclusion, it becomes a scientific fact, right? How can we say that evolution is a scientific fact? You just can't. It's a theory. LeClaire first.
Okay. How do you prove something like Noah's Ark happened or that Adam and Eve existed? Was there any observation that Adam and Eve were
people? I never said that my assumption isn't based on faith. Remember, I confessed that at the beginning. Mm-hmm. My point is, it takes more faith that something came from nothing than God created something out of nothing. You understand? Because this is what we're being told by, take the Big Bang Theory. You would have never gotten me to believe this as a little boy, because common sense would tell me it doesn't make sense. But as we get older, and we begin listening to people with white lab coats who have advanced degrees, the impossible all of a sudden becomes possible, right? The Big Bang Theory is there was nothing out there. There was no matter. But yet nothing exploded and created something. Let me give you a clue, guys. If there's nothing, it can't explode. Okay. And that created order, right? It created all of the order that you see in the universe. How many of you have ever witnessed an explosion? Okay. If you can't raise a hand, did you ever see a firecracker blow off? Did you ever see a fireworks show? Did you ever see a gunfire? Did you see the Twin Towers collapse on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Did any of these explosions that you've seen all of your young life ever create order? You know what? None has ever created order in all of recorded human history. That's observation. Nobody ever recorded an explosion creating order. But yet we can make this assumption about an event that occurred a billion years ago that created all the order that you see. That's not scientific. There's nothing scientific about it. It sounds cool on paper, but it defies human reason.
But you say that because you have faith that the Bible, the things written in the Bible did occur. Does that mean that if I wanted to, I could say I have faith that the being or the force that created this universe was
it would have to be a being.
A being.
Because it would require intelligence. It can't be a force.
So gravity has gravity is a being.
No, it's a force.
It's a force. So it can be a force.
But that's not the creator, is it? You understand gravity, because it doesn't have intelligence, can't be responsible for everything that we see.
Okay. Well, let's say that I had faith that
you think about this for a second. This isn't populism, guys. I think you put that together. Is it bothering anybody that we're taking this direction?
No.
Okay.
Don't, all right.
You like it or you don't like it? Don't want to step on your toes.
If
we need to please here. Go ahead.
If I have faith, if I truly
follow his argument,
truly
okay, guys,
believe that a man of, let's say, 2,766 years old with a blue face and a pink shirt, and he always wears the same thing, if I have true faith that that man created the universe, and I say that this happened in this amount of time, and this is what followed, does that mean that it really happened?
It's a good argument too. Okay, you guys are following what he's saying, right?
Yeah.
Because what we've established, and some of you probably disagree with what I put on the board, that's okay. You're not going to be tested on it, you understand. You'll be tested on populism, not on populism. But my assertion to you was that evolution is based on faith, and creation is based on faith. Now, here's the difference, and it may answer your question. What the evolutionists call faith is different from, let's say, Christians, what Christians call faith. Christian faith, Judeo-Christian faith, is a reasoned faith. You take the scriptures. Okay? I'm not just saying that there was a God who brought the universe into existence, actually spoken into existence, right? I'm not just saying that. I'll start with the text. The text is full of biblical prophecies that have come to pass. Moses writes about events that take place before his time. But think about the order and the events. You meet up God, he speaks, he creates light, and by the sixth day he creates man, all by speaking. And he has the order correct. And this is 1440 BC. He has the order correct. You start with light and you end with higher life forms. Okay? Moses wrote in 1440 BC. Not the earth was created.
Know
where I'm going with this.
Was there dinosaurs on
my zark?
Sorry.
One at a time, okay? I will answer that question.
Okay. Short answer,
yes. And it wasn't a problem. I'll explain that.
Okay.
But Moses writes in 1440 B.C. Most of you have probably read that first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and it was how he does it. Moses had the best education one could buy in his day. Where was he educated?
Pharaoh's palace.
In Pharaoh's palace, he was raised to be a pharaoh. He might not have been next in line, but he was part of the line of succession. He was trained in mathematics, he was trained in creation, the literature of Egypt, languages, as a military commander, all of these things. Public administration, because he'd be running a kingdom one day, and if he wasn't running the kingdom, he would be a general in the army. So but you know what he was taught in schools? You know what the Egyptian conception of the universe was? The earth was the back of a giant tortoise shell supported by four elephants. This is the culture that gave us the pyramids and a calendar and advanced mathematics, etc. Take the other big empire of the day, Mesopotamia, the Babylonians, who are also extremely advanced in mathematics, etc., and architecture, and public administration and law. And what was their concept? Well, there were these two gods, Tiamat and Marduk. Marduk got very jealous of the goddess Tiamat, tore her body into pieces and flung the parts into the universe. And those are the stars that you see. This is all in the ancient record. Now, think this through, and then you can ask questions. But that's what was out there. Where did Moses' conception of the universe come from? Because it was unlike anything that he had been taught in school. And he had the order scientifically correct. You start with light, and then you go to, because you can't live without the light generated from the sun. And you get the energy that we get in the food that we eat ultimately finds its way back to the source, the sun. Plants and photosynthesis. The beef that we enjoy eats the plants, and we get that energy from the plants through beef. Okay, which is transferred that way. Moses had the order correct. Now, this whole idea of faith, my faith is reasoned. It's not like, I really hope it's true, so I'm just going to believe a lot. I hope I go to heaven when I die. It's not like that, okay? It's not like if I could stand on the edge of a building and say, I believe I can fly, I'm going to try hard now and jump off. That's foolishness. You can believe all you want. It's all going to end the same. With your face splat on the sidewalk, okay? Why is my faith rooted and grounded in the scriptures? Because of biblical prophecy that has come true to the letter and verifies the text.
What were the prophecies?
What were they? There were actually hundreds of them.
Well, what were the ones that you remember that I would know?
It came true.
What were
the prophecies? Like not like Old Testament,
Old Testament?
Go with the New.
No, the prophecies that came true.
This one overall.
Go with easier.
I'll give you a major Old Testament prophecy. Okay, I'll give you two. One, let's say the children of Israel themselves. Moses in Genesis talks about how one day they're going to be in slavery for 400 years. Long before the event, but God would deliver them. And then in Exodus, they're in slavery, and who delivers them 430 years later? Okay, things like that. You have many prophecies like... excuse me. I'll give you an interesting one. This is the Old Testament. This is in the book of Ezekiel, when Ezekiel gives his prophecies concerning the nations. He talks about the city of Tyre, which would be off the coast of Lebanon in the ancient world. Tyre still exists in Lebanon today. This is the Mediterranean coast, where Israel would be here, Lebanon would be here. And he had a city, Tyre, right here. Ezekiel rants in his prophecy against this king of Tyre and how evil he is and how God is going to judge him. In the ancient world, the people of this city was really impregnable, because what would happen was there was a tiny island a quarter mile off the coast. Whenever they were going to be invaded, the people of the city would get on boats and go to what they call Little Tyre, a walled rock atoll out off the coast. And they had a water supply and they had food stores and stuff. There. Ezekiel said they would come, that they would be conquered, that Tyre would be razed. Every stone would be overturned and cast into the sea, and the men of the city would be slaughtered, and it would be known as a place where fishermen mend their nets. You can look it up in the older Encyclopedia Britannica, look up Tyre, and it'll say it's a place in Lebanon where fishermen mend their nets. Not the newest ones, but the older ones. When they had the old world's nets, they would fix them. Alexander the Great comes on the scene of history. He's not a military guy. He's a soldier. He gets the Tyre, he wants to conquer the city, and he is so frustrated that the city has escaped. And he's in torment that he has his men take every stone of the city and throw it into the sea to build a causeway from the mainland to Little Tyre, and he slaughters the men of the city. Fulfilled to the letter. That's just one. There are many.
And did Alexander the Great read the Bible?
No, this occurred before his time. It was predicted that the prophecy was, but that specific.
Wait.
And now the coastline of Lebanon looks like this. Because there's a causeway. That's no longer an island. And you have Little Tyre out here and Tyre on the mainland, but that's how it was formed. And history records that Alexander the Great came and raised the city and threw it into the sea. Not just the Bible.
Which means it was
where were you going anyway?
Okay. A few things I was really confused about. One, you said about the evolution, that it wasn't observed and that therefore it's not true, or therefore it's a theory, it can't be proven. In the Bible, for example, one of the first things you said was about how light was created first by the Lord, and then after that, the seventh day was what came into creation?
The sixth day was man and the land.
Who proved that this God did this in this amount of time if God was the only one that would know about this? In other words, if he created light and it took him until the sixth day to create man, then between that time period, who knew besides him?
Only
that this stuff happened. Only him.
Yeah.
So
that's
he.
No. He told Moses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
and we know.
You get it?
And we know that that's.
wait.
And we know.
Yeah, for 6 days there was only him in there.
Him in there.
Right.
Okay.
As far as life on Earth, I mean, you do have angelic beings and things like that.
He was
that.
Okay. Woo, basically around the Earth.
Now, between that period of time, and you're saying that he told Moses, it was Moses that wrote the Bible?
Moses many years later. Moses writes the first five books.
Okay, he wrote the first five books. How do we prove that it is these people who did these different things? I mean, did the Lord talk to him? Did he come down and say, Moses, I want you to write this for me?
The Bible explains inspiration, and it occurs in a number of different ways. Inspiration for the biblical writers, according to the Bible, not according to what some professor said. It works like this. God speaks through prophets and inspires their writings. The text itself could reflect the personality of the writer. Your style of writing permeates the text. But the accuracy is assured of what you're writing. And Moses was a prophet, and he received these revelations from God. I'm sure there were primary sources that he used. Like, for example, if I was Noah, and I knew the flood was coming, I wouldn't just take those two animals on the ark from every breed. I would also take every map I could find, every, you know, math book, whatever, whatever he had in his day, the technology of his day, I would have taken on the ark. I'm sure Moses had ancient accounts that were written by men that were on the ark. Because Noah was on there with his three sons. So when you read the text in Genesis, at least one of these sons is still alive even when Abraham is walking. Now, if I was a descendant, let's say, of Abraham's, Noah's son, Shem, because he lived a significantly long time after the flood, and let's say I was a little boy, Abraham, and I was his descendant, I'd be visiting Grandpa. He'd be telling me these stories on his knee, and I would probably write them down, or somebody in my family would have passed on. So these guys, many of them operated from primary sources, but the biblical contention is that the accuracy was ensured by God.
But wouldn't something like, for example, Noah's Ark be a mistake by God? Because, at least from what I know of the Bible, because he had to destroy it, start over. In my understanding of God in the Bible is that all he's all. Oh, that doesn't sound good. oops. He doesn't make any mistakes, right?
He doesn't make any mistakes. Yeah.
God doesn't make any mistakes. Why would he have to start over?
That was all free will by humans.
Free will.
But free will works this way, guys. And we're probably getting bells so I can ring. I don't even know the time.
Yeah, you got it.
Suppose you were God.
Ten.
You know, the God of your own choice.
Four.
Or let's relate it to a marriage. Let's suppose the person that married you one day was programmed to marry you. And not programmed to marry you, but programmed to love you. And they automatically always said yes, and automatically met your needs, and it was just an automaton. And did your
They're
will.
Boring.
They would be boring. And the love would not be real. It wouldn't be real. It has to be a choice initiated by you. When God created man, he gave him free will. He could have very easily wound us up like robots and said, serve me.
But the angels.
But he's a good God, he's a holy God, and the choice is up to you. You can reciprocate properly to the very one that gave you life, or you don't have to. I love you that much. The choice is yours.
But if God loves everybody so much, then why would it be that if you question or disagree with...
Question.
What do you mean?
If you question your parents, what are they supposed to do?
Some of the greatest people in the Bible question them.
Okay, let's say that you disagree. Okay, let's say that maybe in God's eyes you have done something wrong. If you go to hell, that would mean that you would burn and suffer forever. Let me think about this for a second now. You have an all-loving God. Why would God give up on a human being after just one lifetime? As a parent, if your child did something wrong, if your child did something terrible, would you throw them in an oven and leave them there forever?
I also didn't die for
them. Okay.
What's your response?
Isn't there, like, the whole thing about going to heaven or hell, isn't there, I forget what the name of the place is.
Purgatory.
Yeah. Where there's a place where you go beforehand and, like,
for 5 seconds.
That would be your second chance. Like.
See, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I know a lot of you probably believe in purgatory. I don't. I believe that it's one or the other, heaven or hell. But this is to answer your question. And I believe that because there's no mention in Genesis through Revelation of a place called purgatory. But this is the issue. God is not only all-loving the way he describes himself in the scriptures. He's also completely just. He did everything in his power to make sure that you could go to heaven, so much so that he took your sin on his own body, suffered your pains for you, and he's saying, please accept and believe. You reject that. You belong in that.
But would you still do that to your child? If your child disagreed with you, if your child, let's say, lied to you about something very important and you were very angry at the moment, would you throw your child in a burning oven for eternity?
No, I wouldn't, but neither does God, because we disagree with God on many issues. We're treated like rebellious children, and he does things to try to draw us back. But we can't disagree with him on salvation. Either he paid the price or he didn't. If you reject his gift of salvation, then you're going where you belong.
But if he's all-loving, he would not do that to his own child, no matter what the child did.
It's up to you to reason it out. And, you know, the outcome is, you know, your prerogative. But the way that I see it is this. He's done everything in his power. So much so that he went to a cross that I should have gone to. It was my sin. He was innocent. But you saw the whole Mel Gibson portrayal? That was pretty accurate when you read history. The flesh is beating off his back. God himself sent his only son to die for David's sketch on that cross. That's the idea. And if I reject that, then it really is. Then to hell with me.
So, but even parents, parents always do give their lives for their children. If their children did something bad, would they do that? You don't think they would, though? I mean, I think personally, if I had a child, I would. If it came down to that, I would.
All right, guys, anyway, that handout, bring it tomorrow. You never have to
read it.
And just make sure you bring it to class tomorrow.
Can we get our books?
You don't need your books, just a handout tomorrow.
Yay. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have other days. Which fossilized creatures? You mean like the dinosaurs with the human things?
There are a lot of creatures on the fossil record, but it's still on the Earth.
Right.
So what would be
tomorrow?
Yeah, the creatures that we find fossilized that are no longer in existence from extinct. Almost any given week on Yahoo, they're always finding a creature living in the ocean that's in the fossil record. So where was the evolution going to occur?
That's why I'm
still
confused. Yeah, we'll talk about it. I'm confused.
See.
What you guys can do then is just question 2 and 3 on the handout. Just do it in the
What do you want instrumental populism?
What's that?
Why do you want instrumental populism?
You're not gonna be here tomorrow, we should.
No, I should. Oh, you need homework for the next day after. Okay. All right. See you tomorrow.
What about the day you took?